The Holy Gospel according to Luke. Glory to you, O Lord. Then Jesus told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly, and he thought to himself, "What should I do, for I have no place to store my crops?" Then he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and all my goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich toward God." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Lord.
Good morning, everybody. Oh, I'm so sorry. All right, we're going to get situated up here. How we doing? Good. I am so excited to be here. Thank you again for welcoming me into this space and having me this morning. I'm delighted. I'm sure you've heard sort of my name and pronouns several times, but my name is Cass, as in Cascade, and I use they, them pronouns, and I am the Director of Service, Engagement, and Fun here at Bethlehem Lutheran Church, Twin Cities, and I'm here to share a good word with you guys this morning. I want to admit that when I first saw this text, I was a little nervous. I've heard some scary, shame-filled messages in my lifetime around stewardship, and so if you're in your seat, like, nervous like I was, just, like, take a deep breath together. It's all going to be okay. This is not a shame-filled message. This is a good word. So, I know sometimes people start sermons with personal life anecdotes, but I thought it might be kind of fun to write my own little silly parables that are kind of like the one Jesus told, and hopefully they make it clearer and not less clear in terms of what Jesus was going for in his. So, once upon a time, there was a person who loved the game of football, except they never quite got accepted into a team because they didn't make the cut. And that really hurt, and so they bought themselves a million bajillion footballs. And those footballs sat in a big room in that person's house, and they sat on top of that pile of footballs and were sad. The end. Or this one. There once was a child who always had holes in their socks, and this bothered them so much that they bought a sock factory. And instead of selling those socks or even wearing them, they made piles and piles of socks, and they sat on them. Sad. The end. Or this one. Last one. There once was a person who grew up with a very yucky, messy household. And they said, "You know what? I'm going to buy myself a million bajillion mops because I never want to live in a dirty house again." And so they filled up their every single room in their house with mops, and they lived like that. Sad. The end. So I know that these are silly and ridiculous. The point of these stories isn't that footballs or socks or mops are bad. It's just that it's a little silly if you've got piles and piles of them with nobody to share them with or even the ability to use all of it for yourself. Each of these folks in these silly little stories had something that made them maybe hurt or lonely or afraid, and in compensating for that, they acted kind of silly. And that, my friends, is a lot of what I think this parable is meant to be. You see, in order to understand the ridiculousness of Jesus' story, we have to kind of adopt the ears and the minds of the people that would have heard that story during that time. And we need to know a little bit about their shared understandings about things, especially community. It's kind of like when you tell a joke in another language that you're learning, or you hear a joke. You might know specific words, but if you don't know the context, you might not get the punchline. So we're going to try and figure out what the punchline of Jesus' story is. And in order to do that, I think we need to back up a little bit. Again, we need to understand what Jesus' audience thought or felt about community at that time. And this is just based on my reading of Old Testament scriptures that Jesus references, like the one in Isaiah, or even the Beatitudes, but also how Jesus lives and does ministry with people, the kind of miracles that he does and the messages that he preached. I think that Jesus' ministry paints us a picture of community in which anyone who is socially, financially, or otherwise experiencing vulnerability in their life, widows, orphans, immigrants, women, the sick, people who are incarcerated, social outcasts, those are the people Jesus focuses on and listens to and cares for and includes. It's also a community where resources are shared. This is true in Acts, right after Jesus kind of pops back up to heaven and then sends down the Holy Spirit. It's not just that they're telling people about God's love. It's that they're living it in the abundance of community. Everyone's value is seen. Everyone's dignity is upheld. This is a place of mutual justice, of provision for all, a place free of fear and scarcity and prejudice or scorn for the other. It's associated with words like harmony, togetherness, equity, healing, wholeness, a community that works together for peace, that is pro-thriving, pro-providing, pro-diving into relationship with one another. And it's not just that. It's not just a community for community's sake. It's the idea that when you participate in abundant community in that way, what you're really doing is participating in God's heart and vision for all of creation. So that's part of the context in which Jesus is telling the story. But the kicker is that there's not a ton of that happening in Jesus' world at this moment. And I want to talk about why. Jews at this time are living under colonial rule. They are suffering under Rome's exploitation, not just of their material wealth, but of their identity as a people. Their autonomy, their power is being weakened, questioned, and they've been living like this for a while. And so some of them have started to think that maybe the sort of abundant community Jesus is talking about isn't really accessible to them. The pain and the hardship they've experienced at the hands of the Roman Empire have made some of them think that that kind of community just isn't possible given their circumstance. And for the sake of today's message, we're going to name that a scarcity mindset, just in the sense that it stands as a sort of alternative or in opposition to the abundance that Jesus is moving toward. The idea that hierarchy is just how it is, that some people are on top and some people aren't, and that there's nothing you can do about that. There's a pessimism in that way of thinking, but born of pain, I think. And we often think about scarcity in terms of material wealth, but I hope that we're seeing today that that's not really what this story is about. We're going to keep that in mind. I also want to name, again, having a scarcity mindset is a valid way of coping and surviving in the world. There's no shame in having a scarcity mindset or with the way that the folks that are hearing Jesus' message today are feeling. For the purpose of my message, having a scarcity mindset means, to me, that you've been through a loss of expectations, and therefore you had your expectations adjusted in some way. And here's what I mean. There have been several times in my life, particularly, where either myself or my family did not have the means to provide for ourselves. I'm talking like coupon cutting and Kraft mac and cheese for every meal. We were not doing well. And if you've ever been in that kind of a spot, you know how that adjusts your expectations for how things could or might be in the future. It's a circumstance you that even when it gets remedied, you expect might happen at any time. Your expectations have been adjusted based on your experience. And so you've come to, again, expect that things might not be okay because they haven't been in the past. If you've ever had something you once dreamed of taken away, you're going to have big feelings about that. If you had a vision for what you thought community could look like and it fell apart or was stolen from you, say like in today's parable, the people that are hearing this had their vision for community taken away several times over the course of their history, that would really stink. And that would make you feel deep down like maybe abundant community wasn't really a thing. And that is the context into which Jesus tells us this parable. To a people that have had their expectations altered because of rough stuff going on in their lives. Except this story isn't just about stuff. Again, it's about people, like the terrible little parables I told you at the beginning of the sermon. The moral of Jesus' story is how absurd it is to live a life where you've got all this stuff but nobody to share it with. No abundance of community. And I know that might sound like a harsh or weird thing to say, but raise your hand if you've ever seen A Christmas Carol. Is anybody? Even the Muppets version. Fantastic. So the Christmas Carol is about a guy with everything. He's got gold. He's got riches. He's got the big house. But he really doesn't have anything because he doesn't know how to open his heart to those around him. He can't see that the real gift of being alive is living in deep connection and relationship with others. So that's point number one, I think, to this parable, is that relationships are riches in life and that it's absurd to try and accumulate stuff if we are also cut off completely from community. And again, there's no shame in that, in being cut off from community. I don't think it's always intentional. Raise your hand again if you feel like COVID cut you off a bit from your community, right? We felt that. That wasn't something any of us could necessarily control. And in fact, it was more loving at times to stay away from people to keep them safe. But we had to get creative about how to build community in a time of disconnection. And if you're human, which I'm guessing most of us are, you're going to have big feelings about that. Because maybe it adjusted for you your expectations for what community could or would look like for you ever again. And if it wasn't COVID, maybe it was something else in your life. I know for myself, there was a time when I was cut off from my community, my hometown, and the church that I left there. After my eyes were opened and I realized not only that I was gay, but how unaffirming and hateful they really were towards people that identified that way. And that was a tough decision because those were people I deeply cared about. But for my own sake and safety as a queer person, I was not safe there, and so I made the decision to be cut off from them. Some of the people that Jesus is telling this story to are the people who have been cut off from their community for whatever reason. He's talking not only to folks that have been ostracized, but that knowingly or unknowingly have also been the ones who've done some ostracization of others. He's talking to all of them. And remember that Jesus sees those who are cut off. He is very in tune with those who have been cut off from community because he himself, in many ways, was cut off, ostracized, gossiped about, hated. He knows what it means and feels like for community to fall apart, to be messy, to be anything but abundant. And that's the second part, I think, of this message that I'd really like to talk about, and that is that relationship is risky. I think we all have felt it, the pain of being cut off from community, especially during COVID. How horrible was it to not get to go to church in person or not see people we loved dearly, to not get to hug or hold them or tell them face to face how much we care for them? See, relationship is not risk-free, because to love something means feeling like you might feel indescribable pain if that love ever changes or goes away. We know this is true of romantic relationships and breakups, but even friendships that end or go sideways, it's hard. But risk doesn't mean bad, and risk doesn't mean not worth it. And I want to tie this back into the scarcity mindset while also taking a moment to be a little vulnerable here. Sometimes when you've experienced loss of community in that way, you might feel like that risk is not worth it. Like, if you've ever tried to build community or be in relationship with people and you lost that connection somehow, or it blew up, whatever it was, it fell through and fell apart, you might feel like it's not worth wanting that thing or working for it again. And I just need to name that that is an absolutely valid response. I think we've all, at some point, experienced a loss of that kind, whether of a church group or a family member or a friend or just in general. And I think we must learn to be very gentle with ourselves as we emerge from places like that of bewilderment, of doubt, of questioning, of deep pain. Pain that there aren't words for sometimes. Not just for COVID, but other things in our lives. And I want to offer us that Jesus knows that risk. And he tells us this story in a way that is not oblivious to it. Jesus knows loss intimately. He loved John the Baptist, who was a dear friend, who he lost. He lost the love and allegiance of family members and friends who he ended up having to leave throughout the course of his ministry. Jesus, as a member of the Jewish community, knows that many of the people he's talking to in this story have lost hope. They've lost a bit of their shared sense of togetherness, not even necessarily because of something they did, but because they're going through really tough circumstances. And I wonder if some of them, or even some of us, are tired. We're tired. We've become weary of wondering when things will return to normal, or if normal is just overrated. We've maybe stopped believing that they even could return that way. And so I feel deeply for the people listening to Jesus' story, because part of what Jesus is trying to reassure them of in this parable is how worth it is to embrace the riskiness of relationship, the risk of being in deep and abiding communion and community with one another, that it won't be easy and it won't always be pretty, but it will be good. And in this, we come to my third and final part and point to this parable, this story, was punchline, and that is that the one is many, and the many is one. In the story Jesus tells, the primary vehicle of wealth is material wealth. It's grain, it's something you could eat or sell, turn into bread. But the premise of the story, again, isn't to say that material wealth is bad. Remember, the absurdity of this story is that the absence of community, the abundant mindset of being in relationship with one another is a form of riches just as equal to that material wealth. And I want to tie this back into the first part about relationships being riches in saying that for both Jesus' audience and for us, living out of an abundant mindset means first and foremost knowing how connected we truly are. That my joy and your joy are connected, that your sorrow has become my sorrow, that your peace is my peace, that my provision is your provision, that our destinies and well-being and livelihood, the thriving of ourselves as selves, is always connected to the larger whole, to each other, to that abundance we find in communion and connection. And I hope this reframes for us in a way, not just this particular passage, but all of stewardship in general. Because if over here we have sort of a thin story that just means that having a bunch of material wealth is bad, a potential solution might just be to give it away. And that wouldn't be a bad thing. But I feel like this is a lesson steeped in shame, that it causes us to do something just to avoid feeling badly for having more than maybe somebody else. But I don't think that's the point of this story at all. Because over here on the right, we have a much deeper, richer lesson. And what we actually see is that Jesus is reminding us of the abundance we have in each other, that our individual abundance is actually linked to the abundance of all of those around us, that none of us on earth exists in a vacuum. And friends, there's no one right way to live that lesson out. It might just be the scenario of sharing, like you might imagine, literally giving something away. If you've got a bunch of footballs or socks or brooms and mops lying around your house, you might want to think about who else might need one. I'm just saying, like, if they're not making you happy, maybe they'd make somebody else happy. So a trip to Goodwill, letting the clutter of your life become something meaningful or helpful to someone else. The whole trash to treasure kind of thing. But this is so much more than that. This story has so many ways to be expressed in and through us in our lives beyond a trip to Goodwill. The lesson is togetherness in riches. So maybe making soup and bread and sharing it with a neighbor, maybe that's how you practice abundance. Maybe you're good with a pen, so you write letters to those who've been incarcerated or are homebound to say hello, to remind them that they're not forgotten. Maybe you make a meal for somebody who's got chronic illness or a disability that has kept them from eating really nice home-cooked food. Maybe you don a free mom hugs or free dad hugs shirt at Twin Cities Pride, and you give hugs to folks that maybe feel a bit alienated from family and from home. Maybe you stand in solidarity at a protest with a group whose cultural or racial identity is being attacked, even if it's not an identity you yourself belong to. And you pray for their well-being as if it were your own well-being, for their peace as if it was your peace, for their prosperity as if it was your prosperity. See, knowing that the story is about the abundance of community, our communion with one another, helps us see that we can give and share and live out of so much more than obligation. Maybe you hear about a project or a vision and you believe so deeply in your soul in that vision and you just want to see it come alive. That's stewardship. It's breathing life into something you think is just the most amazing thing. And maybe for you, that's tiny houses for people experiencing homelessness. Maybe it's an art therapy program for service members with PTSD. Maybe it's building a new shelter for puppies who need a home and somebody to love them. But my friends, as many ways as there are for you to express your unique joy and creativity and personhood in the world, as many ways as there are that you enjoy connecting and supporting and offering love to those around you, as many ways as there are for you to be in abundant relationship with others, whether cards or soup or songs or hugs, that's how many ways this story can play out in your life, and that's how many ways there are to practice the abundance of stewardship. It's not about the money or the grain, and it never was. And if you never, ever write a check, that's okay. That is not the invitation. In fact, if obligation is all that you feel, you may need to take a minute and tend to that, not in a judgmental way, but with gentleness and kindness for whatever fear exists within you, whatever hesitation or scarcity you are holding within yourself. Jesus doesn't look upon that with judgment. He looks upon that with love and care and concern. We are invited today to ask ourselves where pain and hurt and loss have caused us to feel this feeling of scarcity. Not just with stuff, but scarcity of community, scarcity of hope, scarcity of joy. And not to be cliche, but I think this is the gospel, a message of healing and hope, part of the good news. Here's what I mean. Jesus is talking to people who are low on hope, who've experienced the scarcity, not just of wealth, but identity and community, of justice and peace and prosperity. And Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary, and I will give you rest. It will be the abundance that you need, and you will be abundance for each other." That he can offer us hope and joy that maybe sometimes we feel like we can't find otherwise. And I don't think Jesus means that in some weirdly abstract or just purely ethereal way. I think he means it in a deeply embodied and grounded way. That the love of God is meant to empower us to hold each other where we need most held. That we are all offered freely the love of God, especially in the midst of our fear or loss or pain. That each of us are loved exactly as we are, and that he does not judge us for what we believe is possible or impossible based on what we've been through. But he does encourage us to hold fast to certain truths, like the truth that we are all connected, that our abundance is mutual abundance, and that even when relationship is risky, it can be beautiful. And for when relationship feels impossible, for that I can only say, God, help us. Help open us to the possibility of abundance in relationship. Open us to the gentle maybe. Maybe things will be okay again. Maybe we will find each other. Maybe there's enough hope to go around. Your maybes are sacred, just as your experiences are. And so my ending prayer for us is that we are all softly awakened today to the abundance of ourselves and of our connections with each other, to the mutuality of peace and joy and justice, to the beauty of loving our neighbor, loving complete strangers even, as ourselves. And my friends, if you have ever done any of that, if you've even dared to try, you have already participated in the punchline, in the heart of this message, in the heart of the story that Jesus is telling, in the heart of stewardship. And to that I say, amen.